Nurse Lauren Carroll from the Alaska Department of Health and Human Services and Dorotha Ferraro from South Peninsula Hospital. I wanted to get to this after our main conversation. I'll preface it a little bit. So last Friday, Representative Sarah Vance of Homer publicly released a letter to Dr. Zink at Department of Health and Social Services all weekend and lots of gossip on the internet. Monday morning, she went on commercial radio to talk about it some more, but has not publicly spoken at all about the response to the letter. Department of Health and Social Services says they did respond to the letter on Monday, but Representative Vance's office says that they are still clarifying information with DHSS and won't release DHSS's response. DHSS also says they will not release their response to the letter. So KBBI has filed a Freedom of Information Act request to get the initial response from DHSS, but that's really not the point here. The point here is there are six questions, three of which seem to be the same question rephrased or extended. The first, let's just go through this because I see three things on this list that we address every single week live with the people who have the expertise and the authorization to answer them. So let's do that right now. First question being, what is the difference between dying with COVID-19 and dying from COVID-19?
Nurse, I can take the first
go for it.
Dorotha, if you like. Okay. I wanted to preface my response by saying these questions are great. I mean, what a brilliant way to increase awareness and education about what in the world is a local public health system and what are the roles and responsibilities of each person, including community members, in improving community health. So I just really would like to encourage everyone to keep these questions coming. They're brilliant. But in terms of what's the difference between, I think I heard the question as dying with COVID and dying from COVID. And one of the main things is dying of or from COVID would mean that COVID-19 goes on the death certificate as a primary or contributing cause of death. For someone dying from COVID-19, say dying from a car crash while having a positive COVID test would not be listed on a death certificate. For some contexts, more than one cause of death can be put on a death certificate. That's my initial response. And it just also noting that the cause of death section of the death certificate, that's a standardized process across the nation. And within that process, it's the healthcare provider, their role and responsibility to complete that death certificate. So the determination comes from the healthcare provider.
And Dorotha?
Ditto to everything that Lauren said. And just to kind of help people visualize things, there are four lines on a death certificate, or four areas, if you will. And there's kind of meanings behind each of those areas, whether it's the kind of like the immediate cause, the intermediate cause of death, underlying cause, or contributing conditions. And so there's lots of different layers and opportunities for the physician to be really telling the whole story of that person's condition and the all of the factors that might have gone in to that person's passing. And so it's not just like one answer. There's a lot of answers and lots of data and information that gets put onto the death certificate. So I think that concept of contributing causes, underlying, intermediate, and immediate, I think that really helps people understand, oh, this isn't just one answer, COVID-19 or not. It's a pretty layered, complicated answer.
And so next I have, what guidelines do physicians have in attributing the cause of death to COVID-19?
So big picture, I would say that the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, they provide guidelines to physicians as far as kind of attributing causes of death and whether it's COVID-19 or different causes. So they have written guidelines, and they even kind of give them some presentations and visuals to go from. So for the most part, a provider is using defined guidelines from the CDC. And the purpose of that is so that in a situation, like whether it's a pandemic, or even as we're as a nation dealing with things like chronic disease. So, we often hear, the leading cause of death in a community is heart disease or cancer or, different diseases. Because the CDC gives guidance to all of the physicians on how to report, that's what allows us to see what's trending in a community or a state or a nation as a leading cause of death, which then allows educators and providers to define what things we need to focus on to prevent unnecessary deaths. So it's a piece of all a much larger picture. It's not just a specific thing for COVID-19. Lauren?
Oh yeah, wow, that's a very good response. The only thing that I would add there is that in terms of reporting deaths, this gives us a picture of the leading causes of death in any particular area, state or nation. And this also plugs into a broader and perhaps additionally important conversation is what are causing these health challenges within our communities, state and nation. And so what reporting deaths can also do is help to feed a conversation about the impacts of things like intergenerational trauma on chronic diseases. And so as we continue to explore what it's like to be in a new public health system within this new century, it really highlights that cross-sector collaboration or thinking about healthcare and all other partners outside of healthcare and what are our contributions to increasing resilience throughout the community. And what are those impacts on chronic diseases?
Thanks, Nurse Lauren. And how is a suspected COVID-19 death confirmed? And what's the role of the coroner and the medical examiner? Go ahead, Nurse Lauren.
I think I'm hearing the question. One thing that's important to highlight is the Department of Health and Social Services does not confirm deaths. So that is the responsibility in most cases of the healthcare provider when filling out the death certificate. And then the Department of Health and Social Services receives data from the death certificates in order to offer epidemiological data for the entire population regarding things like COVID.
And are patients automatically tested for COVID when admitted to the hospital for other health conditions? We answer this one every single week on this program because the answer changes. Dorotha, can you start with, are patients automatically tested for COVID-19 when admitted to the hospital for other health conditions?
As of today, yes, they are. And as of a few weeks ago, I believe is when we started. And you're right, it has been changing. First, we had a lack of testing available in the state. So we had to really, conserve and be particular with how the tests were being used. But as more testing has become available, we are able to do that. And as more knowledge became available on the spread and how the virus spread. So probably almost three weeks ago, the state put out new testing guidelines. I think it was April 21st or April 28th. And they put out new testing guidelines, which they do regularly. Sometimes those change daily, sometimes weekly. And when those guidelines came out, they recommended that all hospitalized patients be tested for COVID-19 upon admission. Is it a mandate by law? I don't know that it's in the mandate by name, by law. The mandate says that we are asked to enact testing practices as necessary to protect patients and healthcare workers. So that's kind of like what's in the mandate. But in the testing guidelines, it is very clear that the state is asking hospitals to test all admissions, if and when possible, for COVID-19. And it really does help us as providers stay safe and have good practices in place and protect PPE as and if possible, because it's not like there's an endless supply of equipment and supplies. But it also helps the physician come to a diagnosis faster based on symptoms and conditions of admissions, and also rule things out. South Peninsula Hospital is doing COVID-19 testing on all patients that are admitted. And then also part of opening healthcare services was to do tests on patients who are coming for different procedures. And so we're just now defining that exact list and making that list known to the public. But based on what the procedure is and the type of interaction that will happen between a provider and a patient, there's a growing list of procedures that then also require COVID-19 testing within 48 hours prior to the procedure. You'll find many dental procedures are on that list, surgical procedures, different things like that. So we'll definitely make that full list available on the website when we have it finalized, but that's a growing number of reasons that folks would get tested. And I would like to take this moment to just talk about testing, that testing is no charge to an individual if they have symptoms of COVID-19, and they can get tested in the hospital parking lot, and they just show up, and if they have symptoms, they will receive the test at no charge to them. And as of this morning, I think we were at 615 tests that we have performed and submitted for results, 615, and of those, 573 were negative and 4 positive, and the balance we are pending. We're still waiting on those results.
And a person who needs a test can literally just drive into the hospital parking lot, and then there are numbers posted for you to text or call. Is that right?
That's right. Yep. You just drive up, call that number. There's a tent that is set up outside the main entrance, and you call that phone number and somebody will come out. We're stationed right inside the door, so it doesn't take but seconds to a minute or two.
Right. They're there for you.
They put on some gowns and some additional PPE and come out and meet you at the tent. You stay in your vehicle and the swabs are done just from the comfort of your vehicle, and you fill out the paperwork and off you go.
And what's the turnaround time on a test right now? They're being driven up?
The turnaround time, depending on the time of day that you come in, because remember, we're driving those tests to Anchorage every day. So depending on what time, if you're there super early morning, your tests will get in that day's batch. If not, you go in the following day's batch. So turnaround time is 2 to 3 days. Because the state lab has such good capacity right now, we are sending all of ours at the moment to the state lab. And you might remember a week ago, I was telling you that some were going to ANMC because of the need for faster turnaround time, and some to the state of Alaska. But right now the state lab has good capacity, so all of them are going to the state as of today.
Okay, so I don't want to, we're about 10 minutes out from the end of the hour, and I don't want to give these last two questions short time. So, Dorotha, this is definitely for you. And, Lauren, if you have anything to add as a representative from DHSS, I'd love to hear it. But I think I'm going to start with Dorotha. Question number 5 is, do hospitals in Alaska receive additional funding for reporting deaths attributable to COVID-19?
I'll start with the answer just that question you just said. To the best of my knowledge, no. Hospitals in Alaska do not receive additional funding for reporting deaths attributed to COVID-19.
However, you can really only speak for SPH, right? Because everybody does everything differently.
I can tell you what South Peninsula Hospital's situation is, and that is that we are designated as a critical access hospital. So not to bore people to tears with government lingo, but that is a designation from Medicare, from the federal government, that basically says we're rural, and we're just a rural general hospital. We're so many miles from the next hospital. Our average length of stay is so many days. We have under 30 beds. It defines you as a small rural hospital. And as a critical access hospital, of which there are over 1,300 nationwide, we have special arrangements with CMS for how we are paid. And so that is for Medicare and Medicaid. And our commercial payers pretty much follow the kind of like, I'm trying to think of the right word, the framework there. And that is that we are not paid based on a diagnosis. We are simply paid on cost, but it's not the cost of an individual's visit or stay. It's this overall cost that's based on a formula that's re-evaluated every year or every so many years. So it's kind of a big picture formula that helps Medicare figure out the kind of the average cost of a patient's stay. And that's basically how we are reimbursed for Medicare, is just based on this formula that can be a year or so old based on average cost of a patient stay. So doesn't matter of your diagnosis, we're not entering that diagnosis when we're asking Medicare for reimbursement. We're entering that a person was hospitalized and using the formula for what the average cost is.
And what
so
about...
we are not reimbursed based on the diagnosis, and we are absolutely not reimbursed based on a death. A death is something that happens at the hospital and is reported from the hospital, but we are not reimbursed in any way for a death, no matter what the cause or diagnosis.
And what about things like the PPP funding, those extra, you know, for the funding you got because you had to be closed essentially for 2 months? Is any of that dependent upon number of cases? Not even deaths, but number of cases?
No, none of the funding that we've currently secured has a relationship to the number of patients that we care for in regards to the COVID-19 pandemic. That funding, the stimulus funding, it was specifically to help hospitals offset loss of revenue from being closed for over 2 months. And that funding is specifically to offset the loss of revenue. That the funding that we accepted, the stimulus funding, is not related to number of patients that we're caring for COVID-19.
Thank you. And Nurse Lorne, I wanted to start with you on the final question, which is, who determines the criteria for someone to be listed as a COVID-19 death on the official state list that's reported to the CDC?
Well, all deaths, regardless of cause, are reported to CDC. If COVID-19 is on a death certificate as a contributing cause, it would be counted by CDC as a COVID death. So again, the cause of death is determined by the medical professionals in the healthcare field. And thereafter, that information is forwarded on to state and federal levels as a permanent vital record. Yeah, that's how it works.
Okay, thank you so much for going through all of these. Nurse Lorne Carroll from the Department of Health and Social Services for the state of Alaska, any final comments for you?
Oh, I just say keep those questions coming.
And Dorotha Farrar from South Peninsula Hospital, any final words from you?
Yes, thanks, Kathleen. Hey, I would echo what Lorne just said, is thanks for the questions, because they help all of us understand confusing big picture that most of us have never walked through a pandemic, and so it's really helpful for everybody to understand. It helps build trust in our local providers. It helps build trust in our statewide leaders and decision makers, and it really helps us kind of understand what's going on. We at the hospital, we appreciate having the state to provide some guidance in this, to have CDC provide some guidance, and it also really helps that we learn from those states that went before us. And as we see things change from week to week, as we visit with you live on the radio and we say, oh, not doing that anymore, now we're doing this, because we learn. It's very possible some of the, you know, reportings or processes may change in the future, but it's really nice to be able to rely on those that went before us to learn and help us practice best practices and use evidence-based protocols.
Well, thanks so much to both of you. If anyone has any questions, this panel reconvenes every Thursday morning at 9. We also do a check-in digitally and record it for Tuesday morning. So if you have any questions that you would like to ask the panel, from Nurse Lorne Carroll to Dorotha Farrar from South Peninsula Hospital to Chief Kirko and Jenny Carroll with the City of Homer, You can email Kathleen at kbbi.org.